Welcome everyone to Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters are people that are making a difference on our planet. Welcome to the show, Patrick Toit, who is the brilliant inventor of a product called Concentrated K. It's not the only thing you've ever invented that has to do with people's health, Patrick. So let's introduce you and find out how you got so smart and what drove you along this path. Welcome, Patrick. Let's see where you came from.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Well, a quick one. I did my undergraduate as a pre-med at Northern Michigan University, and there I ended up with majors in biology and chemistry and stuff like that. And I never got into medical school. I was first alternate at U of M and Michigan State Medical Schools, 2 years running. But I finally concluded I need to get a job, so I went and worked in the paper industry. And presently I'm there as a production manager in a paper mill. I have a master's in biochemical engineering. I have a master's in statistics, and I have a master's in business. I've been coaching. This is my 51st year of coaching athletes all the way through to and including Olympic athletes.
Wow, are you also an athlete yourself?
Yes, I was. Mm-hmm. I was accused of being quite a good ice hockey player back in the 60s and early 70s.
You're not Canadian, eh?
And one of the... Oh, God, no. I'm from Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, originally, which might as well say it's Canada. I've always been fascinated with why athletes are good and what makes a good athlete and what makes a bad athlete. So I've always been fascinated with biophysiology, biomechanics, and things like that. It's been a sort of a hobby for me. I'll fast forward to 2002. Some good friends at a very prestigious clinic in the upper Midwest convinced me to get a 3-day executive physical. And I did.
What's an executive physical? What is that?
It's a 3-day physical. You stay on campus in the hospital's own motel room.
Oh, wow.
And you... Yes, and you get poked and prodded and probed and checked out like you would not believe.
Hmm.
So the process takes really functionally 2.5 days, but basically it's with the exit interviews 3 days. And then they sum up on what they find and what the recommendations are. So as I'm going to lunch on my last day, my attending physician, who escorts me all over the place, she said, "What test would you like to have run, if any?" I said, "Well, you've done probably everything under the sun, but could you do a fast CT scan of my heart?" And she said, "Why?" I said, "Well, I want to see if I have heart disease." She said, "You passed all your tests with flying colors. You don't have heart disease. You passed your stress test. You passed this, passed that." I said, "Look it. You're supposed to humor me, correct?" And she said, "Yes, I'm supposed to humor you." I said, "So give me the test." So I took the test, and then I went to lunch. And lo and behold, I got done with my lunch, which was a pot roast, gravy and potatoes, green beans, and a shooper of beer. I'll never forget that. And I walked into the exit interview room. And there my two friends were from college who were high muckety-mucks at this clinic. And I walked in and I said, "Looks like somebody just died."
That doesn't sound
and
good.
I said, "Well, yeah." So they put the sagittal sections of my heart there from my CT scan. And they said, "We do not have your official calcium score, but this is not good." And I said, "Yep, you're right. My left main was completely calcified from all the heart to the branches."
Wow.
Well, yeah, that will cause you to take a deep breath.
Did you not notice that from doing your workout, your physical activity?
Not at all, as it turns out.
That's interesting.
On my studies, 10% of the people who have hardening of the arteries, the artery gets bigger, it doesn't get smaller. And I'm one of those 10%.
Hmm.
So I found that out the following week when I had a very extensive stress test done on me at that same prestigious clinic. And I got done with the stress test, and I passed with flying colors, and I said to the attending cardiologist, what could possibly be wrong? He then explained to me, as Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the story, mm-hmm. which is, you're going to die of an arterial blowout. And he explained to me how I was going to die, and I wouldn't, there wouldn't be much pain involved. I'd just get a little lightheaded and keel over. And as we investigated my family history, the gene associated with that particular situation was carried on my mother's side of the family. My mother, my mother's mother, and my mother's mother all carried that same gene. And so those...
You know, did they all pass with
my
it?
My grandmother's dead. Mm-hmm. They all died the same way.
Wow.
In their late 40s, early 50s of a sudden heart attack, a sudden coronary.
Wow.
So he said, well, you're going to die. And you're going to die within 4 years. And he said, there's nothing we can do for you. So he suggested, and this is, I'll never, there's certain quotes that you remember when you go through all this.
Sure.
He said, divorce your wife, buy a Harley, find a bimbo, ride off into the sunset to Venice Beach and sell surfboard wax. You might as well enjoy the last 4 years of your life because you've worked so hard. You've done all the right things all the right way, you know. And I said to him, my body got me into this mess. My body's going to get me out of this mess.
Right on.
And he said to my two friends, he said, Pat seems to be in denial. And my two friends said to him, did you look at his eyes? He's going to beat this. So they put a bet out on me that for $500 I would be alive in 4 years.
Hmm.
And they collected each $500 from this attending cardiologist.
Now, Patrick, you must have had a history of like pushing the envelope regularly.
That's been the story of my life.
Yay.
One of my good friends was asked, does Pat think outside the box?
Whenever he can.
And
yeah.
My friend, yeah, well, my friend said, well, I can't really say for sure. And they said, why not? Well, I think he was born without a box. So if you wouldn't know, he just doesn't know what a box looks like.
That's great. Oh, that's
it's always
great.
Been out there. So in my training of athletes and training myself and my academics and all the other peripheral things I did, it's always been by accident, I seem to end up with a series of events that I have to address and then I move on from there.
Mm.
So when I drove home from that clinic, that's when the adventure began. And within 6 weeks, I wrote my good friend Bob out in Tiburon, California. And I said, Bob, heart disease has to be a gut bacteria problem.
And why did you decide that? How could you decide that?
Well, with my background in biology, biochemistry, microbiology, and my absolute understanding of process control and instrumentation systems, the body is a factory, and it's a very, very involved factory, and there's a lot of interconnections and interrelationships, and it's just not one-size-fits-all kind of thing. In other words, the lights on, the lights off. It's in the process control world, it's called a busy system.
Hmm.
So
that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Wall Street. It's a busy system. There's a lot going on at any one given time. And the body has all sorts of fallback positions and all sorts of alternative pathways and on and on and on and on and on. So it's complicated, unbelievably complicated. So I started digging in, and what I first realized, this was in December, was that heart disease is a function of vitamin D. And I found that from a World Health Organization paper that was published and showed the cases of cardiovascular disease per 100,000 people from the equator to the Arctic Circle. And it goes up like a hockey stick and then collapses at the Arctic Circle. I am going, well, that can only mean one thing. That's got to be vitamin D. Has to be. So the more I research vitamin D, it has something to do with it.
Sunshine availability, right?
It's sunshine. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then, you know, as I started digging into that, given my background in biochemistry, I can read these peer-reviewed articles. And back then, the internet was full of just peer-reviewed articles. There was a lot of good, solid science that you could dig through without all the trivia that's out there now. So I could go from the National Institute of Health website in the United States to the one in Great Britain, the one in Russia, the one in Tokyo, Japan, and on and on. So I could surf all over the web and read all really good articles on science as it relates to heart disease. So I would spend between 6 and 10 hours a night reading and reading and reading.
Also working full-time, right?
Yes, also mm-hmm. working full-time.
Now, you didn't run away to Venice Beach and take up surfing, though, and you didn't drop your wife and have a bimbo, right?
Nope.
Okay.
Didn't do any of that. I don't cut and run.
Okay.
I was going to beat this bugger. So I started, and then I realized that heart disease for females really starts postmenopausal. And I went, my. And then heart disease with men is postandropausal. Oh, my. What's changing? See, as an engineer, I go, what changed? And why did it change? How did it change? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm looking at that and thinking about it and going, what could possibly drive this? It's got to be diet. Has to be. So I started digging into anaerobic bacteria, which is what's in your gut, and what they do and how they respond and how they communicate with your body. And I found an interesting article way back when about the vagus nerve and how it communicates with your small intestine and large intestine. I'm going, this looks suspicious. And then how hormones talk to your gut bacteria, and I'm going, my. And the more my's I got, I quickly realized by the end of January of 2003 that carbs will kill you. Cheap carbs will kill you, guaranteed. Artificial sweeteners will kill you. And I'm going, okie dokie, Smokey, now we're on to something. So as I kept digging and digging and digging and digging, then I started reading about how the leaky gut syndrome that people talked about. And then I'm reading about it, and then I went, oh, my God. If you have leaky gut, you have an autoimmune response that, in theory, will attack the thyroid. So I started reading about thyroid. And I'm going, oh, my God. Low thyroid induces heart disease. Cool. So figure that out. And as I kept digging through this stuff and adjusting my own body to, as it relates to the chemistry that I have to adjust my body to, the more things I discovered. I'm constantly keeping an open mind. Mm-hmm. And within 2.5 years, I completely cleaned out my left knee. All the hardening of the artery was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And things were going along in a good direction, and then I got a vaccination. I didn't know at the time what I was doing was really dumb with regards to getting vaccinations. I was taking high-dose vitamin C at the time, like 16 grams a day of vitamin C.
Okay.
And vitamin C kills critters. You know, viruses and bacteria and funguses and molds and all that stuff.
Okay.
And what I didn't realize was vitamin C at very high doses shuts off your immune system.
Oh, really?
Meaning, yes, it means that your vitamin C is doing all the work of your immune system. Okay.
Oh, so it works for you and you don't need the immune system, supposedly.
Oh, yeah. So my immune system was basically on a chaise lounge in Key West, Florida, sipping Mai Tais. That's about what it amounted to.
Is it vitamin C with bioflavonoids or just vitamin C of any kind?
Just straight vitamin C. I was doing the other bioflavonoids in the raspberries I was eating and the blueberries I was eating and all that stuff. My diet was high in broccoli, high in kale, high in sauerkraut. Also learned that, this is funny. This prestigious cardiologist at this prestigious clinic said, you know, you need to boost your HDL. I said, okay. How do you do that? He said, you should run. I said, okay. I'll do that. So I researched what he said. I would have to run 300 miles a week to boost my HDL up as much as he said I should do. And I said, Doc, I'm ambitious and I'm driven, but I'm also practical. I doubt if my joints could hold up. He said, oh, you know, that does sound a little excessive. I went, you think? So then, again, what boosts HDL? So then I started digging in that, and I found ethyl alcohol, booze, boosts HDL.
Oh,
so
really?
In a dose-dependent manner. Yep, it's a U-shaped dose-dependent manner thing. But, you know, so I got a hold of them, and I said, why didn't you tell me that alcohol, within moderation, is good for your HDL? Oh, we can't do that. What do you mean you can't do that? Well, we would be promoting alcoholism. Dude, I'm not trying to be a drunk. I'm trying to live, okay?
Yeah.
I think I can handle 2 to 4 shots a day of a good scotch, okay? Yeah, yeah, so this is part of my travels through all of this business.
Oh, that's interesting.
So within about 2 years, I pretty much came up with the Cardiac Manifesto that's on the website. But really, heart disease is a multi-headed dragon, is what I came to the conclusion of. And it's just not one thing will fix it. So that's how this adventure started. And then, when I got to getting back to the vaccination caused a massive autoimmune response, which basically shut off my pancreas.
Wow, really?
And, yeah, and re-induced my heart disease. My calcification came back raging.
Hmm.
I went from basically 50 to 100 score to almost 1,000 in 6 months. Wow. So, make a long story short, my insulin was up in the high 40s. My blood sugar was off the charts. And here I am eating correctly, training, working out, doing nothing stupid. And I'm now going to be a type 2 diabetic.
Hmm.
And a good physician friend said, here's your literature for type 2 diabetes. I said, stuff it. I'll figure this out too. So what I did for a period of 3 years, I figured I had to get the diabetes under control before I tackled anything else. I decided to shut my pancreas off completely. So I did that by taking vanadium, a chelated form of vanadium.
Vanadium.
And I let my pancreas regrow over a span of 3 years.
So how can you shut off your pancreas entirely? I mean, then what happens? I mean, can you live without it?
Well, no. The way it works is this. Your organs regenerate themselves every 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
They're completely regenerated. So my logic was simply this. If my pancreas, which is not designed to tolerate bread, if you put it to sleep and let some other chemical do the work for you, the pancreas, in theory, can rehabilitate itself.
Wow.
Assuming it isn't being attacked by your own immune system. So I used that logic, and lo and behold, after 3 years, I got off the chelated vanadium, and guess what? My pancreas came right back up. My insulin levels are fine. My sugar's fine, and everything else is fine.
Wow. How did you feel while you were going through it? Were you scared? Were you nervous? Or are you just determined?
I was determined but terrified.
Yeah, I betcha, huh?
It's like, what else, what other curveball can life throw at you? Like, really? Okay, well, here we go again. So now I beat that. And now it was July 10th, or the 2010 in July. My heart disease has slowed down to a trickle, but it was still there. And my left main was still clear, so I'm happy about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just sitting there going, now what?
Mm.
So I sequestered myself in my little house, and I reread all the stuff that I had read. I'm a speed reader anyway, so I went through it. Knowing, as an engineer, I obviously missed something. What did I miss?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference between myself and a physician. Physicians don't think, because they don't have time to. It's not that they can't, they just don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
My job as an engineer is to take the time, think slow, and think it through.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, ready, aim, fire, not ready, fire, aim.
Okay.
So I spent approximately 120 to 130 man hours over 10 days, digging back through all my blood work, all of the articles, double checking this, double checking that. And I stumbled across I know it was from Ricola, and I think it was 1999 or 2000. Ricola had a blurb on vitamin K1 and its implications on heart disease. And I looked at that and I read it, and I went, well, I'll be darned. And then in 2004, when I met Dr. Bill Davis, he mentioned to me about Menaquinone 4 or Menaquinone 7 in Japan. But it was an offhand comment. But I don't forget what people say to me. And I went, my, what do we got here? So I started reading a little bit, and the more I read, the more I realized, oh, my God. So then I went through my blood work. I said, I wonder if I ever got a vitamin K1 test. And it turns out I did. Didn't even remember I did. Hmm. And guess what? It was low. Hmm. It was lower than whale snot. So I'm going, okay. This has got to be it. So then I started researching vitamin K. And I had never heard of it. Hmm. Other than Dr. Bill Davis's comment to me in 2004, which was just an offhand remark. And I went, oh, my God, there it is. Because part of my diet, starting in November of 2002, was high broccoli, mm-hmm. high kale, high sauerkraut, which means, guess what? High K. And I never realized it. Oh, my Lord, I think I've got this figured out. And then I also figured out the gut bacteria connection, such that if the body is demanding K, the gut bacteria will make it out of the food that she eats, which is pretty cool. So then I'm off to the races. So I first picked myself up some vitamin K1. It was a 5-milligram pill I bought it from Vitacost at the time. And then I needed to find MK4 and MK7. Well, couldn't find it back in 2010. You just couldn't do it. And what pills were available were in micrograms, like 10 micrograms or something like that. And I read the research, and it said I needed a lot more than that. So where do I find my K? So off to the Supply Side West Vitamin Conference in Las Vegas. I can safely say I felt more like somebody from Cheech and Chong going to Tijuana trying to score some marijuana back in the 60s. So I'm going to table to table. Hey, man, I'd like to score some K7. You got any, man?
Guys are going weirdo.
Exactly. Where's this guy coming from? And honest to God, I scored some.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I bought it. I bought a key of MK4 for $5,000. And I got, I got my MK7, and then I bought my pill, little itty-bitty pill-making machine. But what I had done, to just digress, what I had done basically in July when I realized that K was probably the culprit, I decided to start taking a statin to drive my LDL down. And you go, Pat, why do you want to do that? Well, if the body likes K and you have driven down your LDL, and your body uses LDL and HDL to transport K throughout your body, as it does with vitamin D and E, etc., then if I take K, and that's the only change that I make, my LDL should come right back up to where it should be, regardless if I'm taking a statin or not. That was my experiment.
Now, statins are statins for blood flow? Are they for... What are they for?
Well, they give statins to lower your LDL because somebody somewhere, somehow, some way, thinks that statins somehow, some way, stop heart disease. Mm-hmm. Well, they don't. Only in very specific cases.
Okay.
Remember, all this stuff is on the average. It's not, there's always going to be exceptions.
Well, are statins blood thinners? Are they blood thinners?
No.
Okay.
They just drop your LDL. And
okay.
They can seriously raise your HDL.
Okay.
That's how they work.
Okay.
Well, I can talk to you about statins till all hell freezes over, but that's a whole other story. So I'm on a statin, I go to the vitamin K conference, I score my K, and then I start taking my K at the levels at which the experts of the world say you should take it. So I did it. Then I got my blood work checked, and my LDL was at 60 nanograms per milliliter, or whatever it is. And as soon as I was going into this experiment and coming out, it was at 150, just changed. And I kept on taking the statin, and it wouldn't change. It just stayed right there, which told me the body loves this stuff.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
Then I got off the statin. Why? Well, maybe the statin's repressing something. So I got off the statin, and guess what? It stayed at 150. My.
Wow.
So then I further read that the body likes LDL between 110 and 175, and it likes your HDL basically over 50 or 60. And guess what? I dialed it right in.
Wow. And how do you feel differently? So, did you feel more powerful? Did you feel stronger?
Oh, yeah. I've got far, far more energy than I've got the same energy as a teenager.
Wow.
What was really interesting, 6 months after I did all this, I got another heart scan. Stopped and regressed my progression of my plaque by 10%. Granted, I'm an N of one, but not bad. I stopped it.
So you're not going to die in 4 years?
No, not hardly.
I love this. So let's talk about the development of your product, because I think it's very exciting.
Okay, well, in 2011, I went to the first Vitamin K conference where all the top Vitamin K researchers get together, and that's what was in Scottsdale, Arizona. So I got to hobnob with people a heck of a lot smarter than me, and they coached me on K. And I talked to Sato from Japan, who's the godfather of osteoporosis over there, and Leon Sugars, who's the godfather of heart disease in Europe, in MK7. And then I also talked with Dr. Suddes from the University of Wisconsin-Madison on K1. And they coached me on K and how much to take and why you're supposed to take it. And they, all three of them, emphasized that you can't take too much of it.
Oh, really?
And that's really cool. Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, but you and I know that these days all kinds of people are on blood thinners, and the big warning is stay away from K, stay away from K, right?
Only those folks on warfarin or Coumadin have a problem. If you're on a blood thinner, not an anticoagulant, there's a big difference.
Okay.
But thinners are like Pradaxa. Pradaxa is a blood thinner. What does Pradaxa do? It makes your blood slippery.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with clotting.
Okay.
And you cannot take too much K because you can't overclot yourself. So to tell you a couple of things about K, first of all, when you take K, that chemical is first used, unbelievably, to keep you from clotting. There are
really?
Four non-clotting factors that K satiates first. So magically, if I could take all the K out of your body right now, you would not bleed out. You would coagulate.
Really?
And that's that's in peer-reviewed literature. That's not somebody at Burning Man.
So we're getting
pounding on a bongo drum.
But we're just getting part information now, aren't we? We're getting like sound bites instead of what you're explaining to us.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's a great way of putting it. So then all the other clotting factors get satiated.
Mm-hmm.
And when the clotting factors are satiated, you can't clot any more or clot any less. You are where you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Then the K is distributed to other parts of the body that's calling for it, such as your brain is calling for K1. And let's say...
Brain is K1?
Yeah, for the most part, right. Mm-hmm. The research from the Canadian government on the impact of K1 in Alzheimer's is amazing.
Really?
And yes. And I got to talk to that head of that research group about that. And once you get Alzheimer's, you aren't going to make yourself better. But from what she indicated to me was if there is a possibility that you can prevent any further progression of it.
Right, okay.
Supposedly.
That, that's pretty significant right there.
Right. Well, there's a little, again, like everything else, there's little caveats in all of this. And one of the caveats is your APOE status.
APOE?
Gene. Yes. A as in Apple, P as in Patrick, O as in Oscar, E as in Edward.
Okay.
Now, your APOE gene, if you are 2-4, 3-4, or 4-4, you are going to get Alzheimer's. There's absolutely no debate on that subject. The research was established well into the 90s of the APOE gene. Now, if you are APOE 4-4 and you take high-dose K1, in theory, you should be okay. And you say, why does that matter? Well, as it turns out, the APOE gene, if you are 2-4, 3-4, 4-4, the gene causes your liver to gobble up your LDL and HDL in a day and a half rather than 3 days. So henceforth, you don't have as much fat-soluble vitamins coating your LDL and HDL. That's how all this works. Because heart disease is a coating problem. You don't have your LDL and HDL, and I'm using that as a generic term, are not coated correctly with your alpha and beta, your alpha and beta globulins carry your fat-soluble vitamins attached to your LDL and HDL. You see how this is a multi-headed dragon and how all this stuff is interconnected?
Yeah.
So what happens is if you're an APOE 3-3, your LDL and HDL is processed every 3 days. So you're okay. You're fine, relatively speaking.
But if
so
you're
3-4. 3-4, 2-4, or 4-4, you need to be very cognizant of the literature that's out there to make sure that you're doing all the smart things the smart way.
So that's really helpful information. So what else does K do in its various iterations there?
Well, when K, let's see, K works on your mitochondria.
Okay.
And that's your little energy center in your cells.
Mm-hmm.
And K makes your mitochondria run a lot better. So you end up with a lot more energy. K also, when it coats your LDL and HDL particles, K allows for what's called reverse cholesterol transport. So when you have your little foam cells that are growing in your artery and you have a properly coated LDL and HDL, it allows the LDL to get in there and kill the foam cell, and then it allows the HDL to slide in there and pull out the junk. So it's a surface chemistry phenomena.
Wow. So it's pretty significant. Mm-hmm. One of the things that bothers me is the number of people that are warned not to take much K because they might, and these are warfarin and Coumadin, but they might have then strokes and so on. Can you address that a little bit?
Right. The issue that you have with Coumadin, it's you should always discuss this with your physician and what you want to do and why you want to do it. Most of the folks that are on Coumadin are on it because of atrial fibrillation.
Okay.
That's from what I've been, I find. So you ask a simple question. Did you have AFib from the day you were born?
No.
No, probably not. So now you got to ask a simple question. What changed? Okay. You see how I approach this as an engineer?
Yep.
What changed?
Mm-hmm.
So you ask a physician, a cardiologist, or an internist and say, look, how's my magnesium levels? The stuff that is out there shows that if your magnesium is low, you have a high propensity for getting AFib.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the literature says.
Now, afibrillation is just the heart tremors and so on, is it?
Right. That's correct. It flutters.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have to ask yourself, what caused it to flutter today and it wasn't fluttering yesterday?
I always learned that was allergy.
Well, it could be. It could be. It's like anything else. What changed?
Mm-hmm.
If you have an autoimmune response that induces the fluttering. What did you eat the day before?
Or even the
you see,
hour
so that
before, right?
loops back, right, that loops back to the gut bacteria thing. What did your gut bacteria liberate, and what did they agitate? Or what didn't they liberate?
Wow.
So even the National Institute of Health says we're undergunned with regards to magnesium, and they say we all should have at least 1 gram a day of magnesium as magnesium. So that would be about 5 grams of magnesium malate, as an example. And if you have friends who, you've probably had friends who wake up in the middle of the night with their calves cramping on them.
Oh, yes.
That's a magnesium deficiency.
Isn't
that neat? You take magnesium, calf cramps go away.
Isn't that amazing, eh? Yeah, because I had some the other night, and I went, oh, I think that's magnesium, and I sprayed some on me, which I have, and they went away. They didn't continue either. I thought, from years ago, I thought I learned also that you had to have enough, this is back to what you earlier said, you had to have enough vitamin D and magnesium. Does that make sense?
No, that's for bone health.
Oh, okay.
This is where K makes a big difference in terms of osteoporosis.
Oh, okay.
And I got this right from the horse's mouth, Dr. Sato, who's at, I think he's at Tokyo University now. Dr. Sato told me, look, osteoporosis is a function of not enough D. You don't get D as you get older because your body don't make it. You don't have enough K. You don't have enough magnesium. And if you get that right, your osteoporosis goes away. And he is absolutely correct.
Wow. Well, that certainly is worth writing down, isn't it?
Oh, sure is. And, the literature is all there. It's all out there.
So it's ironic. So if you don't take any vitamin, you take minimal vitamin K because of the potential of strokes, you can create a clotting factor in your actual blood. Is that right?
If you don't take K,
if you don't have much,
you could induce clotting. That's correct.
Yes,
because if you get really, 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 really low levels of K, you can induce clotting. That's correct.
Pretty interesting. Is you got to learn a whole. We got to learn a whole interactive thing, don't we?
That's correct. Like I said, it's a multi-headed dragon.
Wow, it's very exciting. Well, tell us about your product, because it's K and K, what, K2 and K7, K4 and
it's,
K7?
It's MK4, MK7, and K1. And in the pill is what's needed for a person per what the experts have told me.
Okay.
The MK4 is at the level that Dr. Sato said he'd love to see in the pill. The half a milligram of MK7 is what Leon Sugar said should be in a pill. And the K1 is what Dr. Studies said should be in a pill. Do that. You can check that off the list. It's like vitamin D. How much vitamin D should you take? Well, obviously get your blood checked. But where I live, which is in Upper Michigan, I take 10,000 IUs of D in the summertime and 20,000 IUs of D in the wintertime.
Wow, 20,000, eh?
Above. Oh, yeah. The high end of normal for from the literature indicates that I think you can take 100,000 IUs a day and not have a problem.
Wow.
But, you know, it's like I tell people, who's got the money for that? You know, why are you doing it? But the rule of thumb on D as it relates to heart disease is you need to have your blood levels above 60 nanograms per milliliter.
Okay.
That's the implications. And another thing on heart disease and on osteoporosis is do not take calcium. That's really starting to be contraindicated because the D, K, magnesium interaction is based on a stable calcium level in your blood. And your body works to maintain a stable calcium level. And the way it appears to be working is if the body needs calcium, it'll send a signal to the gut bacteria to liberate the calcium it needs.
From the food that you take.
So don't, from the food that you eat. So, and your blood calcium is highly regulated. And if you're, you know, so that's cool. My Aunt Phyllis, who's going to be 90 next month, 2 months from now, she had her hip replaced because of a mechanical issue. And I'm not going to get into how she hurt her hip, but Phyllis did Phyllis, which is okay. It's Phyllis. So no doctor wanted to touch her. And finally, my cousin convinced a orthopedic surgeon in Grand Rapids, Michigan. My cousin's an orthopedic also, to give Phyllis a shot. So he told me, to make a long story short, the surgery will be 4 to 6 hours, and there's not really a high likelihood of success, but we'll give it our best shot. He called me into the waiting room an hour and a half into the hour and 10 minutes into the surgery. And I said, well, what happened? He says, I'm done. I said, it's that bad? He says, no, I'm done. I said, what do you mean you're done? He says, that's the damnedest hip I've ever seen. He had to completely remove her socket.
Wow.
And put in a complete metal prosthesis.
Wow.
He cut off the ball, put in the metal ball, snapped it all back together, and he brought in his physician friends to see the bones. And he said, if I didn't know better, this was a 40-year-old woman on this table.
Wow.
So what happens is women at her age, when you take the ball and you shove it into the femur, usually the femur shatters or cracks quite severely. The femur, and a fresh femur, a young adult's femur, it'll expand and actually grab hold of the piece that's put in there. It literally grabs onto it, but doesn't crack. Hers did that. And then he says, I don't know what you're doing to her, but keep it up. And I explained to him, and this orthopedist says, well, wow. He says, I heard K&D do things, but I didn't think it would do this. I says, it does.
Wow.
And then,
and how long was she doing that, Patrick? How long was she taking K&D?
Well, let's see. That was last December, so she'd been mucking around with it for 7 years.
Okay. And before that, did she have osteoporosis?
Yeah. But it's all been arrested.
Isn't that great?
So, and, you know, a lot of people are on like Fosamax and Boniva and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. They're now, if you notice, they don't have those ads on TV anymore because what they're finding is that the Fosamax and Boniva induce more
breaking bones.
Bone fractures.
Yeah,
right.
They just collapsed from them.
And one of the problems is when the femur snaps because the femur is dead, they can't fix the femur.
No, I bet, eh?
It's dead. Yeah.
Well, I want to swing back into something that you started talking about at the beginning when you discovered, or at least you became really conscious of, the gut had a lot to do with things. And then you also said, and how it linked with our hormonal health, which of course deteriorates, you know, hormones dissipate by the time they get to Aunt Phyllis's realm, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going, well, that whole being able to replace or heal osteoporosis, at least to a degree, is pretty rare when it comes to those missing parts or those missing chemicals that are natural in the body, right? And that usually the digestion in the belly, the gut bacteria, is kind of more frail at that age too. So this is quite a remarkable story, and it tells me there's a lot of hope anyway, right?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. And that's where if you keep your vitamin D dosage high, that tells the gut bacteria your skin is still making vitamin D. Mm-hmm. You don't take D. When you're 70, you make 10% of the D that you made when you were 17.
Oh, wow. Really?
Mm-hmm.
So this all affects our aging brain as well on all levels, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You see, when you take proper amounts of D, your serotonin levels are maintained in your brain. Because serotonin is made from D.
Well, I didn't even realize that. Now I know. Well, I want to know more about your product because I'm now taking your product, right? And I find I'm not sure I'm taking enough D right now, but this is for everybody to pay attention to their own levels. But I really like this concentrated, beginning with K, concentrated K, spelled like itself. I really like it so far. And one of the things that happened is I get those older lady subcutaneous bruisey looking things, and they cleared up probably mm-hmm. within a few days. Yeah, why don't you talk about that sort of thing? And I know that not the whole population is older, but it's good to emphasize the you know, the fragility of certain segments of the population, right?
Right. Well, what happens with your blood vessels is their elasticity and their repair is a function of K.
Okay.
So if you don't have sufficient K in your system, what will happen is you will be prone to bruising, micro bruises, itty-bitty little blood vessels pop out of nowhere, and you go, where'd that come from?
Mm-hmm.
All of that has to do with vessel integrity, and K is part of the chemistry required for vessel integrity.
Okay.
Now, you can extrapolate that to the brain. If your pipes in your brain are fragile, bad stuff's going to happen.
So like what the hardening of the heart that you were speaking about, mm-hmm. that also happens in the brain for people too, doesn't it?
It starts in the carotids, mm-hmm. but what's more important is to have brain is people who are prone to brain bleeds, mm-hmm. and people on Coumadin are prone to brain bleeds.
Mm-hmm.
They just are. People on Coumadin are prone to getting heart disease.
Hmm. Before they get on the Coumadin.
No. Once they get on the Coumadin, they get heart disease. That's what the literature indicates.
Wow.
And the reason why is because the arteries have less integrity because they're not being repaired correctly.
Well, what I love about this whole conversation, even if we forget the whole thing, is you're saying you can reroute. What did you use? Alternate. The body always has alternate routes, but you can reroute.
The body has many, many different pathways, so you can reroute. Success, you know, your body has a lot of different ways to fixing itself. So,
I think that's amazing.
And the more tools you give it, yeah, it is amazing. Body's an amazing thing.
Well, I think even using your attitude, which is that of I'm determined, I'm not going to go down with that. I'm going to learn how it works. Right? Your
mm-hmm.
your determination right. itself is also a healer, isn't it?
It is. It is. Keeps you focused. Mm-hmm. Keeps you focused. Gives you a reason to wake up in the morning.
Mm.
But I'm not going to lie to you. The first couple of years, I was happy I was alive every 7 minutes. I really appreciate breathing. It's just like, good Lord, you know.
But I noticed that you've gone through all these different, like whether you're magnesium and the D and the this and the that. What's after K? Are you going to keep advancing K? It seems to me you ought to get the K into hospitals like mad. Is that possible?
A number of physicians are ordering the K and using it on their patients, and they're seeing amazing results.
Okay.
I have a couple of oral surgeons that use it, and it is done amazing things for the healing of the jaw, from what they tell me.
Wow.
Again, I you know, this is anecdotal things, so I've got to be very cautious about what I say. But this is what seems to be, there seems to be some good stuff afoot.
Mm-hmm.
That's about all I can say without getting the FDA mad at me.
I think they're being threatened by a lot of explorers like you and others. But anyway, I really like your concentrated K. And as you said, it also boosts some athletes' energy levels so they can perform better, right?
Right. And they don't get when you're at a high level as an athlete and you're prone to stress fractures.
Mm-hmm.
Athletes who take this do not get stress fractures. That's what they tell me. They just because everything's being properly healed.
So you're saying instead of just damping the pain and all the other things that we hear about, or just getting rid of bacteria or something, you're regrowing and rebuilding parts of the function.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Patrick, I'm very excited about this, and I want you to tell people how to get hold of you and how to get hold of your website, because it's got absolutely reams of information on it.
All right, the website is the letter K and a dash and the word vitamins, plural, .com, k-vitamins.com. And it's the clearinghouse for all peer-reviewed literature on vitamin K in the world. And you will see my copyrighted My Story and my copyrighted Cardiac Manifesto and various tabs for various situations that are impacted by K, such as cancer. There's a tab for cancer. There's a tab for kidney disease. There's a tab for this, that, and the other thing.
Clotting.
And it's peer-reviewed literature, clotting. Clotting, that's the latest thing that we got in there. Because doctors are so confused about that. And we keep updating it about every 6 months. We put more good stuff out there and let everybody know.
Because there's more and more peer-reviewed stuff coming up, is there?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And we refuse to do any salesmanship or marketing. And we price the product so that you can afford it at the levels that you need. And
wow.
We don't make, I'm so upset with the world. That's why I priced it that way, because there's a lot of people who are on fixed income that want to live and have good quality of life. And this will help.
Yes. So, it seems like it can cover
it
a lot
it.
Of,
afford it.
Yeah, and it can, that, good yeah. for you. And it can cover a lot of area in a person who's vulnerable. I really appreciate your speaking with us today. And it's just very exciting. Mm-hmm. Very exciting what you're doing, Patrick.
Yeah, well, in the future, let's get together and talk about some of the subtopics, and we can really drill down.
You bet. I'm looking forward to that. We'll do it soon. Thank you so much. And this is Patrick Toit, and it's on Concentrated K. And I thank you so much for being a paradigm shifter, Patrick.
Happy to do it. Take care now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.